Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. It is good to be back on San Diego soil. Kevin Acey, the Padres beat writer. Jay Posner, how are you, my sports editor, my boss?
My friend? Not so much, yes. Right? I kept waiting. I was waiting for that last part, but it never came. So that's okay. As long as I know where we stand, I'm good. So everything is good here. It's always good to have you back in town. Oh, yeah. and not running up the expense sheet for at least a few days. And this is a long homestand, Kevin. You're here for like a week and a half, I believe.
I'm not sure anyone can handle it. My wife, you, anybody. But hey, speaking of which, Marlins for three, Phillies first place in the National League East for three, and then Nationals, I think, second from last place in the National League East. There's a 10-game home stand against teams in the National League East. Two of them stink, but this is baseball, Jay. The Nationals. Coming here in sweet.
I know it's hard, and it's still hard for me to get my arms around the fact that the Nationals, who throw Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg out almost every series, twice every 5 days, could be so bad. And yet they're 24-32 right now. I mean, we'll see what they are when they get here. The Marlins, I mean, 2 weeks ago this looked like, oh wow, get the Marlins here. We can't wait to play the Marlins. They're the worst team that baseball's ever seen, or at least since last year's Orioles. 19-35 is their record, but they were 10-31, which means, I'll do the math for you, Kevin. It means they've won 9 of their last 13. So they actually come in here as one of the hottest teams in baseball over the last 2 weeks. Yeah, they swept the Mets and Tigers, who aren't very good. They just won 2 out of 3 against the Giants, who aren't very good, but they are playing better. And the Padres will see their best pitcher tonight, Caleb Smith, who has a WHIP under 1. He's actually the team WAR leader. His ERA is 3.05. He strikes out 11.5 guys every 9 innings. I mean, this will be a challenge. Everybody's like, oh, who's Caleb Smith? But Caleb Smith's a good pitcher. Jose Urena, Trevor Richards are kind of hit and miss. They've been okay. Both have ERAs around 4. One thing the Marlins have done, I noticed, is give up a lot of home runs. More than, I think, just about any other team. Third most home runs in the National League. 66 homers in 54 games. So maybe the Padres can get, you know, we've seen the Padres get hot in terms of home runs, especially in Toronto. Last week, bullpen not so good for Miami, so we'll see what happens when the starters get out of the game. Although Sergio Romo, who seems like he's as old as I am, is in the pen, and he's, I think, 11 out of 12 in saves. So he's always one of those guys you think, well, we should be able to hit Sergio Romo, and what does he throw, like 84 or something? But throw some sliders, and, we'll see what happens, but I don't think anybody can ever take anything for granted in this game, as we've seen.
Well, no, that's the thing. And so the idea that this 10-game homestand is like a measuring stick or defining or something like that, I think it's preposterous. But there is like some merit to the thought of, look, the Marlins are going to come back to earth. They are. That's just what happens. I mean, good team or bad teams, almost all bad teams will have a run
of course
during the season. Look at what the Padres did last year.
Yeah.
If you come back to earth, it's like a basketball team that, you know, was down by 17 and they made it all up, but then they're gassed, right?
Right.
And so,
and the Marlins offense is awful. I mean, I should point this out. They are last in the league in runs, doubles, triples, homers, walks, slugging, OPS, total bases, and they're all the way up to 14th in the league in batting average and on-base percentage. This is a terrible offense, 167 runs, which means they're averaging barely over 3 per game. So this is the kind of team the Padres
right.
should be able to shut down. But, I think we said this, and especially fans said this before the Pirates series, and the Pirates mm-hmm. won 3 out of 4 here.
Now, I think the Pirates are a better team, but the point is the same. And so it's, do they come back to earth now. And yes, you know what? The Padres should bring them back to earth now by winning 2 of 3. That just goes without saying. But to make it any more important than that, I mean, every World Series team, I think the Red Sox were swept by the Tigers or something in August last year. And, you know, the Padres are not the 108-win Red Sox. But I do think that it is an interesting series because I do keep kind of waiting for this Padres team to either falter or to sort of, like, win 7 out of 10 on this one or something like that. And you go, okay, well, that's what you're supposed to do. It will be interesting, obviously, not to get ahead of the Marlins, because, I mean, we want to make sure we savor every bit of this 3 days.
Absolutely.
But Bryce Harper and the Phillies, that'll be interesting.
Oh, no, yeah, no question. And I mean, the Phillies are vastly improved this year over a team that was already, you know, that wasn't terrible. And then, like I said, with the Marlins or with the Nationals, I haven't looked ahead to see the pitching matchups and whether Scherzer and or Strasburg will be throwing here, but you would figure at least one of them is. If it's a 4-game series, you're not going to be able to miss both of them. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. And then the Padres after that go out, what do we have, San Francisco for 2 on the road and Colorado for 4. The Rockies playing much better at this point, as at least I expected. They're finally over 500.
Right.
For the season.
That's a scary notion when you see that, hey, they're over 500, I guess, since what, they were like 1-0, or was it 2-1 or
something like that. I mean, I know they were 3-12 and they're 25-15
right
since that. I mean, that even with Charlie Blackmon out now, I mean, that's still a good team. But anyway, the Marlins this weekend, and let's go back to Yankee Stadium a little bit on the 2 games that we didn't talk about since our last podcast. Start with the second one, Chris Paddock. Off to a rocky start and looked good at times. I mean, there were times, I mean, he threw some fastballs, just blew some guys away, changeups guys were waving at. But the Yankees clearly had a plan, and that plan involved, you know, jumping on bad pitches mainly. And Paddock threw 2 bad pitches to start the outing. I mean, that 0-2 changeup to LeMahieu to start the game was just awful. But, you know, that happens. You're going to throw bad pitches, and then the idea is hope the other team doesn't take advantage. The Yankees didn't miss too many of those bad pitches. What was Paddock like after the game in terms of, you know, he hadn't had an outing like that other than maybe the Dodger game, you know, a few weeks ago. But what did you take from Paddock's performance and especially what he was like in the clubhouse afterward?
Well, this is maybe something only a sports writer, a beat writer could appreciate, but he's growing into, you know, being able to deal with a loss. And that's not to say he was bad after the Dodgers loss, but he clearly had rocked him the time against the Dodgers, mm-hmm. where they had sort of just like grinded him to a pulp, basically.
Right.
And this one, it was like he had had time to assess it already. He knew stuff wasn't good. I should have mixed differently. I threw, you know, some bad pitches, some ill-advised pitches. Okay, this is a good team. And like all of the good players, he believes he beat himself, and that's fine because the Yankees beat him. But you know what? Like you said, he threw some bad pitches. I thought that he handled himself very well. Mm-hmm. And why does that matter? It's just like it speaks to this mentality that a guy has to have. It's like, are you going to be a baby about it? Or you know, and a lot of times, how you treat the media or how you're acting in the clubhouse afterward really doesn't have anything to do with what you do on the field. A guy like Chris Paddock, it kind of does, because it's like the whole package, and that's what makes Chris Paddock what we all think, or what many of us think Chris Paddock is going to be and what he has been. So I thought, you know, hey, look, you know, the thing about the Yankees is all the guys they're missing is like, wow, that could be so much more of a dangerous team. But like, Clint Frazier, that's a good player. He's about like 7th. I mean, they just keep rolling guys out there. You know, DJ LeMahieu. You know, I mean, obviously that's a good player, but it's like there's no superstar maybe in their lineup right now. But it's like not really any slouches either.
No, I mean, Luke Voit's got what 14 or 15 home runs, and Sanchez has more than that. And no, I mean, there's no real slouches there at all. And now Paddock, you know, he'll come back and he misses the Marlins. And one thing I thought that was really interesting, we talked about this in the office the other day, and the idea that the when the Padres didn't throw Paddock in Toronto, you know, they had a choice. They could have pitched him in Toronto. He said he was okay. Could have faced a lineup that wasn't terribly good when he was, you know, maybe not quite 100%. So they took it easy. And then when they pushed him back to Wednesday, to me, that meant they could have pushed him back to Friday if they really wanted to. They could have,
sure.
You know, Joey Lucchesi would have been ready to go on Wednesday, could have thrown Lucchesi Wednesday and said, well, let's give Paddock another day or two and let's let him throw against the Marlins. And I thought it was a great idea by, you know, Andy Green, Darren Balsley. Well, Balsley wasn't even there, but, you know, Andy Green and his staff and the front Brawler. Office and whoever else is mm-hmm. involved in these decisions to say, you know what, let's throw Chris Paddock at Yankee Stadium and let's see how he handles it. And let's put him out there against one of the best teams in baseball. And it at this point, we know that if we put him against the Marlins, yeah, he'll probably dominate. But let's see if he dominates the Yankees. And if he doesn't, let's see how he handles it. And I thought that was one of those things where, you know, if you're trying to win every single game, maybe you wait on Paddock. Maybe you don't. I mean, he's also, he's been your best pitcher, so you want to throw him against
right.
a good team. But it would have been easy to say, let's take it easy on this kid and throw him against the Marlins. And I thought that was a good move to put him out there against the Yankees. And let's see him pitch against that team and that stadium and that environment and see what happens. So I thought that was good. And now that leads me to the next thing. That also puts him against the Phillies for his next start. And I think if he had pitched Friday, in fact, I know this, if he had pitched Friday against the Marlins today, his next start would have come against the Nationals. So instead of facing Marlins Nationals, he's facing Yankees Phillies. So again, two better teams. And let's see how he responds back at home against another really good lineup in Philadelphia.
And now we have to hope that he lines up. And I believe me, he's already done the math. I'm sure of it. Now we have to hope he lines up against the Marlins in Miami. Because honestly, I'll guarantee you, he was disappointed. As much as he was happy to face the Yankees, he really was. He wants to face the Marlins. I just had to say that.
Okay. Well, that's a way. That's not till after the All-Star break, and actually, if we figure looking at the schedule here, if we figure that they're going to give him an extended break around the All-Star mm-hmm. break, they come out of the break, play three games against the Braves at home, and then go on the road and play the Marlins. So as long as they don't use him over that weekend against the Braves, which you wouldn't think they would, right? If they're trying to
stretch him out, and at that point you've got Nelson Lamet,
right?
Who knows who else?
So
I would think that is a place that they are going to both before and after the break, or at least one of those, give Chris Paddock some extra time,
right? And having him face the Marlins in Miami would seem to be a good place for him to pitch, given his history. Although I can't imagine there's anybody there who says, yeah, you know what, we really did make a great trade getting half a season of Fernando Rodney for Chris Paddock. But
none of that matters to Chris Paddock.
No, I'm sure.
I bring it up because Chris Paddock will be fired up tomorrow.
Right, right.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, no, that'll be that's something I that'll be fun to that'll be fun to watch. But anyway, and then the other game, the one the Padres won in New York, which
yeah.
was kind of a weird game, and they scored four runs in the first inning, and of course my immediate thought was, and I think I even texted you this, I said, I'll bet the Padres end up with no more than five runs in this game. It's like we've seen that before. They get off to, you know, if they have a quick start, it just kind of dies off, and sure enough, they scored five runs. The question was whether it would be enough to win. And somehow, some way, in the rain and everything. And how hard was it raining, by the way?
Pretty hard, and then harder.
Okay, because it looked bad on TV. It always looks worse on TV. But it seemed. Were you surprised that they didn't take him off the field at some point, or were they just so desperate? Because it seemed like they could have just brought him off the field, and even if they had to call it, come back at noon on. Noon the next day and just finish it up then. But what were your thoughts going on during that game?
The one thing was this, and Andy Green, who has never been shy to say that, you know, hey, for the health of the players, whatever, afterward. And afterward, he was fine with how it was handled. And I'll say that you could tell that Joe West was on top of it, and the field never looked bad. Now, the grass was giving up a lot of water, but in terms of the footing and all that, and, you know, obviously they do a great job at these ballparks, and especially on the East Coast where they have to take in these thunderstorms.
Right.
The field never looked bad. There were some times where I'm like, on the ball and mm-hmm. then some balls that went through the grass, but I'll tell you what, the field never looked bad, so I actually wasn't surprised they didn't call it. But it was about as hard as you were going to see it And it was during crucial points in the game, and I know we want to talk about
that was the
crazy seven.
And that was the thing where all those pitchers, you know, having to pitch with the wet baseballs, did any of them say any? Did you get a sense that they were like, hey, why are we pitching in this garbage?
Not the guys who actually went through there and, you know, like walked a guy and then were taken out, mm-hmm. Robbie Erlin, Phil Maton, but the other guys, some guys who didn't pitch were like, That's pretty rough to come in. First off, you're coming in those situations. Those are rough to come in the rain. Though, yes, they did.
And what about the way that inning was handled? I mean, I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I always look at it that, you know, somebody on Twitter said, well, why did they take out Wick? And which made me laugh because most of the time people on Twitter are like, why is Wick even in the game? And the same is true for a lot of those guys. And it just felt like Andy was just trying to find somebody that could throw a few strikes and maybe get an out. And I also said to someone that, you know, we don't know what the matchups look like. You and I have talked about this before, where maybe Brad Wick matches up, like he pitched against a right-handed batter. I think he even got him out. And then he mm-hmm. came out but when another right-handed batter was coming up. But what we don't know is, how does what Brad Wick throws and where he throws it match up with how this next hitter hits and what he likes to see? And maybe it's better to have, you know, I think it was Maton who came in to pitch to that guy. Maybe Maton matches up better with that. And that's the information that we don't have and people don't have when you're sort of making judgments on whether to leave a pitcher in or out in that situation. And I always figure that they have more information than we do. And, you know, it's not like any of those guys that are out there are really trustworthy all the time. You know, Wick, Maton, Erlin, I don't even remember who else was in there and everything, but none of those guys outside of Kirby Yates and sometimes Craig Stammen are the guys that you can put out there and say, okay, this guy's a lockdown guy. We're going to leave him in there no matter what. I assume Wingenter, they didn't want to go back to back.
There it is, right there. Okay, so it was Wick, Erlin, Maton, Stammen, and I still think Stammen. It's been rough. It's been mostly a rough month, but Stammen still has to be right below Yates in terms of who you want to go to. And, mm-hmm. and Andy Green didn't want to go to Stammen because he still had the eighth inning.
Right.
He had to wonder, are the umpires going to call this thing? And I can't, if I put Stammen up, you know what? What do I got in the eighth inning? But Wingenter, just coming back from the shoulder, and this is evidently no longer a factor. They wanted to get him this week. But
okay.
Wingenter was on the IL for the shoulder. They weren't going to pitch him back-to-back, so you didn't have him. Matchups is absolutely what it was about. And then you throw in the Wick and Erlin, the walks.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know exactly what the matchups were or if Andy would have stuck with another guy, but, like, I knew exactly why he was doing what he was doing. Maybe not all of the factors, but the rest of us have this book, right? We got righty lefty. We can maybe go a little deeper and then look at the splits
right.
and all that. We aren't paying attention to so many factors, how a guy hits this type of pitch in this type of place
right.
with this type of spin. Plus we don't know the health of play of the pitchers.
And I always, I'm forever amazed, and I shouldn't be, at the idea, and this isn't just with the Padres and Andy Green, but it's with most teams in most sports. And I mean, I saw Warriors fans last night being, you know, criticizing Steve Kerr, calling him a moron, he can't coach. I mean, it's like there's just no escaping this. You know, I mean, you can win all the titles in the world, and there's just this idea that coaches and managers have no idea what they're doing. But they're the ones that are – it's always the manager and the coach who's to blame. And fans never want to blame players, or almost never want to blame players unless they're named Ian Kinsler. That – why is it not the pitcher's fault because he can't throw a strike? And if the pitcher would throw a strike, he'd probably stay in the game. And I think that's what always gets me, and it's why I should stay off Twitter more than I have been able to recently. Because I just will never understand the fan mentality. It's like fans will blame players when it comes to salaries, that they make too much money. It's never that the owners make too much money or that the owners sign the contracts. They'll always take the owner's side there. But then on the other side of it, they'll always take the player's side when it comes to, when it comes to whether it's the coach's fault or the player's fault. So Anyway, I don't get it rant for the day, but I'm sure you'll straighten me out on this, Kevin.
No, one of my favorite parts of the podcast is how often something can feed into one of your, you know, one of your things, Jay, and I love it. The other thing about this bullpen, and I've written a little bit about it, and I probably should go deeper, I've got a lot of stuff on it, and I've written about it several times. You know, Robert Stock was huge last year, and he can't throw a strike this year. Jose Castillo was big in high leverage situations, and he's out. You know, at the end of the year, Miguel Diaz was striking people out left and right. He's down in Double-A rehabbing. Trey Wingenter has been hurt. There's a reason that Craig Stammen makes what he does and Kirby Yates makes what he does. Bullpens are made up of two or three guys and then two or three, you know, high leverage pitchers and then a bunch of guys. That's right. What a bullpen is. Well, the Padres' bullpen is mostly guys now.
And sometimes those guys, as you put it, have to pitch in higher leverage situations than anybody would figure
exactly.
to be ideal. And that's when you have to hope that they step up. But to me, it's like there's just not a lot of options. And to say it should have been Wick or it should have been Maton or these guys should have had this sort of, you know, I don't think those guys have proven that they should be counted, that they can always be counted on. In those situations,
That's exactly it. The difference between like a guy and Kirby Yates, it's just monumental. It is, and it shows up in the seventh inning or the eighth inning at New Yankee Stadium with a one-run lead. That's what it is.
Kirby Yates has been amazing. I mean, he's had two outings, I think, the two outings against the Dodgers, where he gave up the runs in the late innings. But you know, the idea that every single time he's had to protect a lead, he's protected a lead. He's not, you know, there's going to come a time where he doesn't protect a lead. I don't think Kirby Yates is going to go 52 for 52 in saves or something. I mean, it'd be great to see, but it's kind of hard to believe that anybody's going to do that. I mean, Mariano Rivera didn't save every game. And I'm sure when Rivera gave up a run, people said, oh, man, what was that guy doing in the game? Joe Torre's an idiot. So
it is pretty fascinating in the life that they lead these relievers too. Like think about Craig Stammen right now, 35 years old, right?
Yeah.
Been doing it for so long. And by the way, came in and pitched a perfect eight there at Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, after they got the hit off that kind of 12 hopper, that single up the middle, he shut him down and did put him in position where Yates could come in and save the game.
But he's got every single time he goes through this, he has a thought in the back of his mind, will I ever get somebody out again? That's what these relievers live with. He's the best.
No, it's
fascinating.
It's crazy. So, but it's, I mean, that's one of the things I love about the game is, you know, you don't know who's coming in and going to step up in a situation or get a big hit or anything like that. I mean, you know, Greg Garcia could have a game where he gets a bunch of hits and then the next game, you know, he takes three straight strikes in a key situation. It just happens. I mean, that's this game, and those guys always talk about it, it's a game of failure. And, you know, Twitter and social media and fans in general and media, a lot of media in general, are not made to deal with the fact that these guys are going to fail most of the time.
No, it's that sport. And I'm right beside Al Hosmer that will be online later today. That's about that and his ability to deal with failure, of which he had many last year and at the start of this year. And how important that is for the younger players to see, because this game just churns you up.
Right.
One more thing on this, and this is the beauty of the game. We've spent 10 minutes or more talking about a sequence of seven batters in the seventh inning of a game 3 days ago. It's beautiful that we could do that. You and I could probably continue to talk about it. Well, not for the first time. I remember seeing all the comments. And by the way, it was going through my head on Saturday in Toronto, the lineup the Padres threw out. Right?
I remember that. Yep. What an awful lineup that was that day.
And it was this was not the first time this has happened. Of course, it was the first time they scored 19 runs that it has happened. Because I think that was tied for the second most runs in Padres history. But it was, this is a disaster, blah, blah. Okay, now, I'm not blaming anybody for saying that. I guess what sort of crushes me is that we don't learn from it.
Right,
because
right.
It happens a lot. Because the Padres haven't put out a very good lineup for a lot of years. And every once in a while, when putting out those very bad lineups, they score 10 runs. And they beat Max Scherzer. Well, I just thought that was hilarious on Saturday, because that was without Franmil Reyes. And that was Whitney and Kinsler, and Greg Garcia was leading off. And by the way, Greg Garcia is just a fantastic pickup for these guys, but probably shouldn't be, you know, starting all their games and won't here in a while. What happens is the very next day when the lineup is like that, there is, this is going to stink and they're going to lose. And it makes me just chuckle. It also kills me just a little bit at a time.
All right. Well, I think we should leave it at there, because that's a perfect way to end it. And we will see you out at the ballpark this weekend. Remember, everyone, if you've hung around this long, Sunday's game starts at 3:00, 2 hours later than usual, because the marathon is here. And then we will be back on the podcast on Monday morning to talk about this, what happened against the Marlins and what's coming up against the Phillies.
The Phillies, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. Thanks, everybody.